Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
Well, the Solidarity Party's sex education bill is going to be debated in the Dáil today. But we want to know, have we ignored a crucial element in the school sex education system so far? And that is what it is that the kids themselves actually want to know about. And is there any real will to change? So to discuss, I'm joined by Elaine Burns, who's a doctoral researcher at the School of Psychology at NUI Galway. Elaine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andrew.
People will be aware, Elaine, at this stage that the Education Minister, Richard Bruton, has announced a review of the relationship and sex education system curriculum in schools in both primary and secondary level. But just first of all, what's your view on that? What is the right age to actually start a conversation with students?
Well, I very much welcome the Minister's announcement last week of a review of sex education and how it's delivered at both primary and secondary level. But when it comes to the right age to start a conversation, I think we can start, Andrea, at Montessori level, from the perspective of, you know, understanding boundaries, understanding respect, respect for ourselves and respect for others. And my own children actually are at primary level, and how they learn about this aspect is very well delivered, I think. But for me, something happens between primary level and secondary level.
In what sense, Elaine, in that there isn't the same kind of follow through with the level of information?
Precisely.
Okay.
Precisely. There isn't continuity. Like, I've interviewed students as part of my own PhD work, and the first question I ask them, because it is about their sexual behaviour and their sexual experiences, as an icebreaker, I said, well, if you take yourself back to second level, say, how did you learn about sex and relationships? And for the most part, how they learned wasn't through the school system. They would have acknowledged, some of them would have acknowledged that they had some RSE, but it was very much focused on mechanics, on biology. Mm. They would have remembered classes in biology on it, but very little on relationships, healthy relationships, the emotional aspect, the psychological implications, all of this weren't discussed. And another thing, Andrea, that I think is important is discussion. Because in the sexual health module that I co-facilitate with Richie Sadlier, that we're piloting with transition year students in his alma mater, our focus is on peer-led and interactive activities and encouraging the students themselves to discuss and debate and explore what sex, sexuality, sexual health means for them.
Just on that point, because you mentioned it there, I suppose, as part of your own doctoral research, the kind of, I suppose, work that you're focusing on is areas like research on sexual behaviour and the communication of consent. And that was something that we talked about at length on our Between the Lines programme 2 weeks ago on a Sunday morning. And one of the things you do, Elaine, is that you facilitate what are described as consent workshops for students. Just give an outline to people listening today as to how these consent workshops work in terms of their practicality and the kind of discussion that you have with students.
Well, I was involved in the development of smart consent here at NUI Galway. I'm a facilitator of those workshops. And they take place usually, certainly in NUI Galway, during Shag Week. And the reason for that, Andrea, is because that's a week when students are focused on sexual health and you know how best to protect.
And because the week is it's sort of modelled on, I think, previously what was known as RAG Week, isn't it? It's the Sexual Health Awareness Week, and that's
yes.
how it gets its name.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's a good time to focus and to have the consent workshops during those kind of weeks. And basically, what we do is at the beginning of a workshop, we kind of get a feel for what people's understanding of consent is. So if you were to asking people, if you were to define consent, how would you define it? And I always say that at that stage in a workshop, we find that people have a very good, what I'm calling an operational definition of consent. They can trot off a definition. Right? And then we go on, we use some data from my own PhD on hooking up behaviours and people's personal comfort with sexual behaviours and how comfortable they perceive other people to be. And this can be like a flashbulb moment for people when they realise that how comfortable they are with behaviours and how comfortable they perceive other people to be with the same behaviours, there can be quite a differential between those two beliefs. Mm. And that's rooted in social norms theory. And what we tend to do is we tend to change our behaviour to meet how we think other people are behaving. And that's particularly true for risky behaviours. And one of the things I would always say to students is, you know, engage in sexual activity to your level of comfort, not the level of comfort you think you should have, or not because everybody else is doing it, I should be doing it as well. Right. So that's one aspect to the workshop. And then we explore through vignettes. These would be hypothetical scenarios where the consent is deliberately ambiguous, and get students to tease out then where they're seeing consent, where they're not seeing consent, where consent could be given, where consent should be given. And again, that's very powerful for them. And that encourages a dialogue and a discussion around their own beliefs, what they think, what they've heard, what they think they know. And then we'll go on then to phrases and statements that people can use to communicate consent.
And the reality is, Elaine, that probably a lot of the students that you're talking to and dealing with, and even probably more specifically at a second level age group, they're probably acutely aware of all of the different, you know, various different terms and various various different ways, whatever things that they see on, you know, television, magazines, films, etc. They're probably a lot more informed than even their own parents realise.
I would think so, and we're seeing that for the boys at second level. But, Andrea, the issue is the boys are that we work with are acutely aware of gendered stereotypes and expectations for behaviour for males and females in heteronormative situations. Again, these sort of stereotypes are culturally and societally embedded, and again, they're very heteronormative, in which males are depicted as predatory and females passive. And we challenge all of these stereotypes that they are aware of through media, through whatever mediums they're using to find out about sex and to educate themselves before we go in. We challenge those. And I'm seeing with the boys that we work with, they've actually had a workshop because they're transition year students. You know, they're doing lots of different kind of modules. And one of the modules they seem to invariably have had before ours is one on law. So their understanding of consent or the perception of consent is from the perspective of the legal definition of consent and the consequences of being in non-consensual situations from a legal perspective.
Okay.
And they're quite defensive.
They're quite defensive?
They're quite defensive, yeah. And one of the things, because this is a belief of mine, immersed as I am in all things consent for the last number of years, is that while I do welcome the conversation that we're having around consent, I do think it has become very gendered in that there's an onus of responsibility on males to be the ones who are seeking consent. And females then, and again, this is adhering to a traditional kind of a sexual script that's highly gendered, and females are the gatekeepers then deciding whether they get it or not. Right?
And that's the view of the student, is it, from your experience in the classes you deliver?
This would be a traditional sexual script. And again, they do subscribe to it because these are societally and culturally embedded, these sort of stereotypes and stereotypical perspectives. But we challenge those because for me, one of the most important things in consent education or in the communication of consent is that it's mutual and that it's bi-directional. And there are two of you involved in this encounter. So, you know, why should the onus of responsibility be on one or the other? I would advocate equality of responsibility. And actually, the first time I remember, I had to kind of psych myself up in a workshop at third level to bring that up. And if the discussion that generated was really enlightening for me. And then I'd bring it up in every workshop after that. And interestingly enough, for me, the female groups are very, very strong in their agreement with that. The notion of equality of responsibility in communication of consent.
Can I ask, Elaine, the Solidarity Party sexual education bill is being debated in the Dáil today. You talked about, I suppose, the idea of listening to the opinions of the young people that you talk to and deal with in the consent workshops that you deliver in second and third level. Is that how much of an important part is that? The fact that throughout all of the various different stakeholders that we'll have in the revision and review of this RSE programme, how important is it that the students themselves are actually consulted on this?
To me, it's crucial. It's imperative that they're consulted. And in fairness to the minister, he did reflect that in his statement, that he was going to provide an opportunity for teachers, students, principal and parents to be consulted. But I think the voice of the student shouldn't be just an add-on. That should be central. Because one of the things that Richie and I do at the beginning of the first session in the module is we conduct a survey just to get a baseline of the boys' understanding of sex, sexuality and sexual health. Invariably, that's limited. And also we ask them, what do you want from this module? What is it that you want from it? And firstly, they're surprised to be asked.
Okay.
And secondly, we're seeing, I would say, remarkable consistency in the three core things that they want to get from the module or want to see and discuss and explore in it. And that's healthy relationships, consent and contraception.
So they're the three areas that the actual students themselves want to focus on.
Yeah, that they want to focus on. Because like they have an understanding. The boys that we work with actually have had some semblance of RSE in their school. So they're fortunate from that perspective that they've had something. But this, we need, I think, with this revision to go beyond. And the minister said he wants a fact-based, a review that will include a fact-based delivery of sex education. I actually think we need to go beyond that. It needs to be an holistic approach.
And what would be the difference, or in what sense, Elaine?
Well, basically what we have at the moment is fact-based, okay? But to go beyond that to include consent, contraception, healthy relationships, and also to explore like psychological implications for them, to explore emotions, to explore feelings, to explore maybe struggles that they're having that they've never articulated with their own sexuality.
Okay, so it needs to include, and to be fair, I do think that certainly, I understood that that's what the review is to incorporate, that it will look at even the role of social media as well as part of a wider discussion. One of the things that I know the Solidarity Party have been very much looking for as part of this sex education bill is the fact that religion or a particular religion ethos wouldn't prevail, that this would just be like, you know, a maths programme or an English subject. It would be taught in the same way to all students. Just in your own professional experience, Elaine, in so far as that you obviously have carried out a lot of research in this area and deliver classes on this subject. Is that, how important is that?
I think it's vital because, you know, when I look at it, I would always give the comparison with somebody delivering an RSE programme and somebody delivering a maths programme. For example, a maths teacher is highly unlikely to say, you know, I'm not very comfortable with Pythagoras' theorem, so I'm not going to teach it. Whereas with the RSE programme as it exists today, there is the option, there is an opt-in and opt-out of elements of it.
Mm.
Right? Now, that to me is unacceptable. There would be uproar from us as parents and from students if teachers were cherry-picking parts of the curriculum that it didn't suit them to teach in primary subjects. So why should it be acceptable with sex education that bits of it can be, you know, ignored, depending on the level of comfort of the person delivering.
Okay. So just for on that particular point, for instance, just I see a couple of different text messages in here from listeners to the piece today, Elaine. One point, just one particular parent says that she has a teenager, a girl who's now 13 years of age. She's trying to avoid having the conversation with her because it always turns into a kind of a laughing sort of a match. Mm. She wants the discussion to be had at school, but she doesn't necessarily want the teacher to deliver that. So is there an element just from your own experience of dealing with parents that people want outsiders, not necessarily the class teachers, maybe more so at primary level, to deliver these kind of programmes?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do believe, and it's the experience of Richie and I, that the relationship between us as facilitators and the students is very different naturally to a teacher-student relationship. Okay, and I am at a loss to understand how a topic such as sexuality is expected to be delivered by teachers who lack training in what is a specialist subject with unique challenges. And I think it's an unfair burden to expect them, a geography, a history, a math teacher, to effectively moonlight as a sexual health educator. And I think one of the ways in which that could be addressed, that the way it's being inconsistently delivered, is possibly to have outside facilitators coming into a school.
Okay. Just on that advisory point, just because there's a number of different messages, Elaine, on that. People talking about primary school, they don't want their kids at a primary level to be hearing about an awful lot of graphic detail about sex education. It would have to be adapted in a way to meet the needs of, and I know kids can obviously be at different levels, have a different understanding of things as well, but there probably has to, surely the information would be delivered in a way that's age appropriate as well.
Oh, absolutely. And as I said, my own children are at primary level and I'm happy with how it's being delivered to them. But then again, that's in our school. You know, is there consistency across all primary schools? You see, we've been focusing a lot in this conversation over the last couple of weeks on at second level. But you know, not so much at primary level. But I think what's being done at primary level is being done well, with the exception of, I spoke at an Oireachtas briefing a couple of weeks ago, and there were representatives there from the LGBT group in the INTO. And one of the things that they would like to see changing is for the curriculum to be more reflective and inclusive of different types of families, for example. You know, that their perspective was that it is good, the programme, but just to be more mindful that not all children live in, you know, kind of heterosexual, heteronormative kind mm-hmm. of families, to be mindful of that and to make children aware at that kind of an age that there are, it is a spectrum.
Okay, and that's actually just even on that particular point, just questions again regarding the ethos, particularly over Catholic schools. Somebody else wondering, will the idea of different sexualities be discussed with children at a younger age? Just actually, Martina's got in contact to say, a very sensible conversation about sex education that I've heard. Can the powers that be listen and engage with yourself, Elaine, on that? And Noel has got in contact to say, as a male educator of second level boys, I'm pleased to hear your guest talk about a gender neutral approach to consent. Young men feel that are generally badly portrayed in a debate to date. So just, I suppose, goes back to that point. Just on a final point, Elaine, because there's a number of people asking, if there's any parents listening to this today, whether it's primary or secondary level, who want to just get a little bit maybe of information, background reading on maybe how to bring up the topic or subject with their own kid, if they wish to do so, is there any advisory point website that you'd maybe recommend that might have some useful kind of basic tips for them?
Yeah, I actually referred to it again this morning, Andrea, as the Crisis Pregnancy Programme. They have a really, really comprehensive website, and there's a section there for parents. Just on that very point, suggestions on how they could introduce the subject with their child, and you know, just making them feel comfortable themselves in having that conversation.
Okay, and that's about the entire sex education discussion?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
We'll leave it there for the moment. Just take one more text on that. Age-appropriate material needs to be delivered to children from junior infants. Waiting until secondary school level is far too late. And my thanks to Elaine Byrne, doctoral researcher at the School of Psychology at NUI Galway, joining us there on the programme.
Thanks again for listening to this Lunchtime Live podcast. Please do subscribe via the app or on iTunes, and check us out on newstalk.com/lunchtime live. Talk to you again soon.